Hello and welcome. You're listening to
Brain Dump.
This is a podcast where we talk about life from the meaningful
to the extreme.
We're going to do a sub-series because I want to bash more content out. Mm-hmm. Monty's great. Spice things up. I want to get a bit more free and freestyle with the old Brain Dump. Keep, you know, the usual episodes going, but these ones will be a little side series to keep your taste buds for the old Brain Dump.
Imagine the main episode's the lecture and we're very much the seminar.
And there's just us two. Documentary versus cartoon version of the same documentary.
Exactly. Don't take it too seriously. We don't.
It's just our opinions, no agendas.
What we've decided to do is have chat about a topic.
We need a name for these little sub stories.
Chat about a topic, C-A-T. Cat.
Oh, there we go. Wait, does that work?
It should be chat, though. And what would make it... How do you spell chat? Oh, C-H-A...
Mate. And we decided to talk about drugs first, didn't we?
I think that's a good place to start.
It's broad. I also like the fact it's slightly taboo. I remember what you said one time is there is a huge difference between people who've tried drugs, like recreational drugs, and those who haven't, and that you connect with people a bit more when you know that they have. And I genuinely think that as well. When someone's tried drugs, you've experienced life from a different perception.
An indicator you're a like-for-like person is a catalogue of experiences that you've shared, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a conversation piece that you can go into as much depth or as detail as you sort of want to. It might not be the most engaging conversation, but... You know, talk about experiences, your Friday, Saturday night, what was going on.
Yeah. Also, I think it attracts a certain type of person.
Attract or create?
Ooh, interesting.
Because I think it's a culture and a community, isn't it? And especially going out in like a club environment that everyone does sort of turn into. There's a lot of a similar type of person. Are they all drawn here, or does this environment consistently create that kind of person?
What worries me with people with drugs is when the drug is the experience, rather than the drug enhancing the experience, when the drug consumes everything. If you're, let's say you're going on a night out and you're getting really drunk for the sake of getting drunk, and the night out is the excuse to get drunk, that's when I'm like, this isn't cool. But when you're getting drunk because it's like enhances the social environment, you get on with people a bit more.
Is that not bollocks though? That you're, to say that you're taking drugs to have an enhanced experience, it's showing that there's a deficit there, that there is absolutely no need, or should be no need, in a social occasion if you want to do it. The rationale behind why they do drugs. For the majority of the people, that sort of Friday night feeling, we're going out, we're going to get wrecked, going to dominate the weekend and then sort of roll on to the next week. It's far less about anything other than the drugs. I think it is purely an exercise in taking drugs.
I guess it really depends on the drug, because broadly speaking, you can kind of put drugs into different categories. Disassociatives and associate alcohol being a dissociative, it very much separates you from yourself. It very much sort of numbs sort of
depressant,
the ego.
Exactly that.
And then something like cannabis, weed, the opposite. Everything is heightened a bit. You're a bit more sensitive. You're a bit more connected with your feelings and your senses. Although you could argue that you almost focus on the wrong senses.
But it is a like hallucinogenic experience. It's a turn on.
Yeah, it turned on. Yeah, off. 100%.
Sure, isn't it? Yeah.
So if you're abusing a disassociative, that absorbs the experience, the fact that you're sort of shutting yourself off. You go to a nightclub and there are hundreds of people in their own little world. They're clearly just there doing themselves rather than... Environment is the key.
The environment that I think it probably pulls you towards.
That's true.
There's no clear picture on anything because there's no sort of honesty because of the illegality of it.
There's something weird about being in a club when everyone's on MD and you're not. And it's just, I'm not on this wavelength. And this feels, I feel quite isolated. And
I think it's a weird perspective that when I remember myself when I was going out when I was 17 and 18, that I didn't really clock drugs in club 100%. Scenes then. But then as I've sort of got older and experienced more, it's now I see it everywhere.
Yeah,
see it, everyone 100%. On it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There was a time in my life when I didn't see.
No, I agree. That naivety means it wasn't even on your radar. Bristol is impossible not to see. Mm-hmm. And you can see the influences on like culture. It's the same with Amsterdam. You can go there and you can tell the city is sort of, drugs is a lot more liberal and that's shaped a lot of people. It's like a laid backness, but also there's a creativeness. But it's interesting, like people and sort of connection between drugs. You kind of get on with people who've done drugs mainly because you kind of know that they've felt that different state. But I also think it's because you've been vulnerable. When you're drunk, you are vulnerable in some aspect. And it's the same with drugs. It's a different kind of vulnerability, but there's a shared vulnerability in that situation. And I think there's an understanding that that's shared experience as well.
There is the value in that vulnerability when you're having that experience, because when you're having those experiences, you're able to connect with people on the completely unique levels that you can't really tap into unless there is drugs. So I think it cuts away a lot of the slack. A process of friendship or getting to know someone that could take a year, 6 months, 3 months can just be condensed. Everyone can identify with this, whether it's with drugs or alcohol, that there's friends in your life that without that particular substance that sort of bonded you, you either wouldn't be as close a friend or it would take more time.
Well, that's why you have work drinks and teams do social stuff like that. Like it does, there is a kind of bonding experience in that. My gripe with it sometimes is it's instant gratification. It's that we're fast tracking it. It's too easy.
That fast track is the thing, isn't it?
And that's the dangerous when people abuse it, lose out on something. So my friends who go back to like my childhood, those guys, I have something with them that I don't have with anyone else. Grafted friendship. We've been through some shit together and we've...
The hours have been put in.
Yeah, like, yeah.
We know each other so well. So many shared experiences over such a long period of time. And you've seen there's a flexibility to grow and acceptance between the group.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true friendship. But I think you get a replication of that when you're having a high experience.
Yeah.
You feel that connection with someone. But if you look back at the people that you've made those connections with, they're not around
anymore, those people.
The people that were, that have had the time and the man hours. So I think it probably does build friendship, but I think a fickle beginning, maybe.
Friends where drugs has been more of a focus and blossomed out of that. Have been much better relationships with these people, and you kind of mature to it. Like I'm over it, you know what I mean. And as a result, something fun to do, but I don't really care for. As a result, I've gained without too much sacrifice. You know what I mean? It's a difficult topic. I don't think sobriety is very healthy for you,
which is a strange concept, isn't it?
Yeah,
because you're 100%. Saying that your body in its natural state.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird, but I don't know.
You're saying that it's in need of intoxicant. To be balanced.
I don't know if it's a need. There's something beneficial about
to operate in our society and
maybe it's just a modern thing.
It's weird when I was traveling to see different people's attitudes towards alcohol is quite strange.
In
different countries, and to go to somewhere like Malaysia, a Muslim country, their laws are very sort of in that direction. No alcohol on the street. There's no culture of it. And to see a modern city like Kuala Lumpur, which has got, you know, the Petronas Towers, biggest, and it's like they're obviously not drug free and not alcohol free, but it's a pretty dry society. But to see them, you know, they operate. And it does seem that Brits have a strange attitude towards alcohol. We can't make friends without it.
British people are quite awkward, aren't we? Like, you know, there's all the stereotypes do kind of stick. The whole British people like to queue and we're all very kind of formal and impersonal, and we are
ordered.
It's literally, we're like structured humans sometimes, and sometimes social affairs literally how they start without the loosening effect of alcohol. I remember my friend Steve, he knows his Alchemical Tours podcast, and he's interviewing a lot of people on drugs, and he is quite interested in this sort of shamanistic practice. So there's some kind of wizardry leader who gives you a psychedelic drug and guides you on this sort of trip. That is a really important part of drugs. You know, when we go
guidance.
And even when you, let's say you're doing MDMA in a nightclub, there's always that experience where someone knows more than you on about this drug, and they have to teach you and you have to trust them that they know what they're doing, because you're vulnerable. Because there is a risk, there is a potential that you could wreck your life by messing with something that is a really dangerous chemical.
It's a very strange level of trust that you're sharing with that person, because you are essentially asking for someone to trip-sit you.
Yeah, yeah.
That is probably more intoxicated than you.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's where modern culture is a bit screwed up in these shamans, all these ayahuasca followers. You know, there's some type of tribal shaman who makes you this brew and then everyone shares it around. The tribal shaman is probably tripped a lot of times on ayahuasca, but he's sober and he's got this process and the whole ritual around it, where I think modern society, we just like, let's have a sick time. And it boils it down to just the trip, where the experience is everything else. It's the shared vulnerability, what you learn about yourself. That's
are
just...
you not having a shamanistic experience? In a modern context, yeah. that guidance, that person knowing more than you doing it, is that not what we've boiled it down to?
Yeah,
it was
maybe.
Once this shamanistic experience where it was like this man would guide you through this practice, hopefully guide you towards enlightenment, and now it's like your mate Gary that's getting you wired and MD.
Yeah.
On a Friday night after work.
But I feel like that's what the British shamanistic ritual is, alcohol. I remember you saying something like that, but we've built every culture seems to have some kind of traditional ritual around some kind of drug. So, you know, we have ayahuasca and peyote and, you know, and then there was a whole LSD boom in the 60s. Cultures built around it, but also then drugs create cultures. And alcohol is one that we got given or were dealt.
And it was sort of, it seems like the Brits have done just alcohol.
Mm.
The French were like, just wines. And like, no, beer will do it, lager, whatever. We'll do gin, anything. We'll do. Not going to sell it to me, I'll brew it in a bath, whatever.
Yeah, personally, I find hangovers are awful. Like, I literally feel like they'll come down to me. Like, I feel so depressed, so miserable, and I hate it. And it knocks me for six. I like being sort of tipsy. That's fun. Mm-hmm. Properly drunk. The whole disconnect, I hate. It makes me feel really isolated, down. Smoking a joint where I feel connected. I feel socially engaged and I feel chatty. Two stones, then you're not even thinking straight. But
imagine if you swap the two.
Yeah.
So in a nightclub, you're smoking weed, and in a nice, comfortable environment with your friends, you're really drunk. The social environment is the thing that make that experience good. You throw that into a nightclub with loud music, not particularly enjoyable. And I think being really, really drunk and comfortable with your friends, like in a high environment, but as a drunk environment, getting silly and stupid and fun. I love that.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
it's true. They always say about state and setting with psychedelics, but I think it applies to all drugs. Nightclub scene is. Now, the number of times I went to a nightclub and there is someone freaking out. Uh-huh. They are not in a good place. Their mates have left them or bailed or what the hell? Like, this is...
If you just take a poll server at the door of a nightclub, you having fun? As people are leaving, what percentage are probably saying like, yeah?
Yeah.
People are falling out and like being sick and like people have left them. It's just like, I don't know, it seems like a lot strange.
It's such a weird concept. This is where I think Amsterdam coffee shops are such an incredible concept. Like, I remember when I went to see my sister, and me and Gina, Indy, were all like sitting down in this coffee shop. I looked around expecting it to be like a load of tourists, but it wasn't. It was like a load of middle-aged locals. And I was like, this is cool. This is sophisticated. This is mature. We're just having a joint, just chatting, catching up with each other.
That's what you get. It's like, this is grown up.
Yeah.
It's nice. 100%. And it's like, there's no... Like they've really tried to pull and strip away the silliness and it's very much like getting a coffee or going for a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just going for a joint.
100%. I think a reason I hate alcohol a lot of times, when I was younger, it just made me angry. And I was going through a lot of trauma at the time. I had so many negative connotations with alcohol. Plus, I literally would have like one beer and I was bollocks.
Yeah.
Now, your relationship with the drug and your association with it and everything is quite a big impacting on sort of everything else. For me, something like weed, where it's helped me on my recovery from depression and helped me chill out as a person. I have lots of positive things to say about it.
Yeah.
I often think like a lot of people who like get anxious on weed, I think strain is a big thing. But that's overlooked massively.
And strength.
And as strength, well, 100%. And also, situation you're in, I don't know, I imagine if you're trying weed for the first time, a load of strangers, that would automatically be quite stressful. I have a lot of mates, if they smoke a joint, then they go really quiet and then they are trapped in their own thoughts. You have to engage to...
But do you think trapped? I'm not sure that's a...
Because
I'm smoking in a social environment, I go quiet. People look at me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you look at the individual and think, oh, they're having a bad time. Or, you okay?
Yeah.
They're having a time.
Yeah.
They're being quiet.
Let them,
you know, let them be quiet. But I think it is all about mindset and how you go into it. It's all about mindset. If you're smoking a joint to unwind and relax and just shift into another gear is one thing. If you're needing it to, you know, manage, or you're going into it being like, oh, I can't work to... Dangerous things with all drugs, isn't it, is that they become tools.
100%.
And it is completely on how you use that tool. But once you know that it does something really quite well and can shift you into that gear, why try and make your life better when you can just be content?
Yeah,
shift yourself into that other gear, and it's very easy.
Yeah, and I think a lot of problems stem from that instant gratification. Is boom, I can change my mood or my state of being by just eating this, smoking that. That is the danger, because then you're avoiding something. If you're wanting to just flip to something and you're hiding, covering trauma, or you're not tackling something.
The instant gratification, I think, is really the problem, because it's the reason that obesity is an issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that people are going for that instant gratification. Yeah, it's what causes drug addicts. It's people that get used to this instant gratification and this model of like managing their behavior.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's substance-based rather than action-based.
Again, it's a whole legality of drugs. You treat an alcoholic, they have trauma. They're drinking because they're trying to numb something. Same with drug addict. But because of the legality of the drug, we lock one up, we treat one. That's so dumb. The emotional maturity approach to that is like, no, he's smoking this and you need to lock him up.
It's the people that are giving out that treatment, a medical professional, so they know that there is no difference.
It is
a substance issue, but they're in the framework of legality. And it's weird to think that like parts of this conversation us admitting criminal behavior.
Yeah, yeah. It's mad.
It seems such a strange thing. Like, you've got no right. I'm not doing any harm to anyone else. It seems a strange thing for a state to be able to justify legality.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess the worry from the state's point of view is by talking about it, they're like, oh, you're encouraging potential use of these substances that can be harmful. But then there's a lack of trust there. Like, of course,
but
they
trust us with alcohol. And the amount of alcohol-related deaths that occur each year.
It's just a joke. I read a really, really good book, Chasing the Scream. Name, Johan Harari?
Johan Harari.
That's the one. Uh-huh. I think it's that. Anyway.
Yeah.
He basically did a book on drug prohibition. And he goes back when it was first ever, whoever came up with the idea of banning drugs, to drug users and sort of methods to change the law. Fascinating. The main reason for drug prohibition is to basically, it was a racist thing. It was to lock up black people who had weed because they just wanted to, discriminate. A lot of black people back in, 1920 or something, had more weed. It was like a way of being racist.
Times have changed. it's like the situation.
That's white folk, non-discriminative. Anyone who has an interest in drugs take drugs. Mm-hmm. Race is just irrelevant.
But you still see now in America that drugs that are popular within minorities, the punishments for possession are far higher. If you're a white woman caught with a bottle of Xanax that isn't written under your name for the prescription, nothing. They are both doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Breaking the law in exactly the same way, but they're just not being treated the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%.
And it's just mental that there's a difference at all, that you've treated one way for alcohol, one way for one kind of drug use, and one way for another type.
It's so wrong. There are certain drugs that are a bit more easily abused.
Yes, but you need to do it through education. Can't do it through making it illegal, because it doesn't work. We are all testaments of this.
Yeah.
It's ineffective. It doesn't do what it's saying that it's doing. Is it doing something else that they're saying it's not doing, perhaps? Or is it just in place because there's no reason to get rid of it?
Well, there's all these also theories that it's illegal to keep us locked in our egos and no freedom of thought. There might actually be a bit to that. We are, as humans, easier to manage when
being sensible and sober.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if that's the reason that they can go fuck themselves.
100%.
It's mental, and I don't see how they can justify it, because I don't think there's any real reasons for health.
No.
And anything that with health can just be countered with alcohol.
Yeah.
We'll make something else illegal then, if you're making things illegal.
Portugal illegalized all drugs. Canada, where they have like heroin dispensaries. And, actually take heroin safely, they won't inject
drug
it for you,
but
they'll give it to you.
Are dropping,
yeah, literally, like
they're not bothered anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's all these like heroin addicts. They know they can get free, safe heroin. Stop taking it. They start getting the rest of their life on track. The need for heroin disappears because there's nothing to numb, because they're improving their life.
You know, your whole day is set up making 75 quid a day that you can get.
High.
That drive is gone. So you're not tied down by I need to be a criminal to survive.
If we were able to be vulnerable, open and honest in a society where you didn't feel judged, and if you're having a tough time, you could talk about it and you wouldn't have to seek that instant gratification, then you could live in a society where drugs are banned. Then the need for it wouldn't be there. Or you're masking trauma with drugs when the issue arises. But then that requires state to trust in people, and there needs to be provisions and facilities for broken humans, I guess.
It's such a complicated issue. I'm so conflicted by it, but it is, because it's not all consistent. Not all drug use is bad. Not all drug use is damaging. It shouldn't always be seen as like leading to that. And in the same way that people now view as any sort of viewing of porn as not great. I like porn, actually. It might be damaging on the whole, and it might not be great, but I like it. And in the same way, like if I like weed, just connect with me in a way that other things don't.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
So like, using the porn example, there's obviously a lot of porn out there, but there's a lot of very derogatory, hardcore stuff. I think it does escalate that level. I don't know.
But is that not...
Don't get me wrong, like, you do you, you know, whatever. This is the perception of sex that we're getting. And that's the interaction that people assume sex is like.
And it's not the product, is it? It's the way people are using that product.
No, I agree, like, I agree.
Porn exists for sexual gratification and getting your end away. And if you're using it for sexual education, how would that ever be beneficial for anyone?
No, for sure.
Absolutely, like, it cannot be used. Drugs absolutely should not be used as a coping strategy or to modify your behaviour or your mood or to give you instant gratification. Sure, use it for other purposes if you want to engage and break into a new way of thinking. Is a different thing to use. It's lunacy, isn't it?
That's where I think, so like, again, using a porn example, has porn created that, or has the demand for porn, this culture of what porn is? Because obviously there's going to be porn that's, let's call it softer porn.
I don't know if you certainly made videos. And it's like, that's not, you know, mad. That is a video of a typical experience. I think the majority of porn is that, but the majority of porn that is searched for.
Do
you want pedestrian porn? If you're going to engage in a fantasy, why not?
Going back to drugs, you just escalating that. For example, like being high or being like tipsy and being stoned and being absolutely off your face. And okay, you could say there's situations for both of those scenarios. We've got to a point where getting absolutely off base or like completely stoned that you don't know what planet you're on is too common. Do you not think we like escalated to that? Makes me think there's something wrong with society that we use this instant gratification to escape. You could say porn is the hardcore version is extreme sex rather than...
I'm not convinced it's a new phenomenon though, particularly. Because otherwise pubs in Britain wouldn't be huge for, you know, 500 years. Like, it's not as if the modern context that we're living in is pushing us to do this. Yeah, I think it's been something that we've been doing for a long time.
Maybe it's just a human thing.
Not all humans do it. Yeah, it seems there's a particular kind that really do it.
It's interesting.
I think if we were demanded to be serious in anything, there needs to be a break from that. And I think in Britain, it's a particular example of that. We are quite reserved, quiet and polite in day-to-day existence until we get drunk. And then that releases like a second side. If there's a desire, a pull in one direction of your personality.
So many different situations. Different types of people who are using drugs for different reasons. Mm-hmm. For me, again, it also depends who I'm with. There are certain people that I would absolutely not want to engage with in that kind of situation. And other people are like, yeah, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like,
probably, I would get high with anyone.
Really?
I would smoke a joint with anyone.
Mm.
I think that's a perfect speed date.
To be fair, yeah.
Can you capture me in the time it takes us to finish this joint together?
But also there is something like going for a joint versus going for a beer versus going for a coffee. All very similar things. Uh-huh. I would choose a joint number one every time. Uh-huh. I think coffee second, beer last. I feel like, for me, that's a great thing about coffee is it tastes really nice and you have a good conversation. Never lasts long enough. It is nice in that sober setting.
That's what is perfect for it. It never lasts long. You're always left wanting more with coffee when you're going on a little coffee date. It's short but sweet.
Mm. Join, I was fine with weed. I can translate my thoughts so much better. I think a million miles an hour about ridiculous thing, partly what caused sort of a lot of depression and stuff. When that million mile an hour thinking is on bad, negative things and you just spiral. But with a joint, it allows to translate my dyslexic, weird brain a lot easier. So I feel quite comfortable when I'm high talking
slower pace.
Yeah, creative. Like, uh-huh. Yeah, I'll enjoy that. alcohol, you're less insecure, aren't you? Dulls that down. I'm less myself. With weed, I'm connecting with aspects of myself that I want to express that I can't express a lot.
Mm-hmm.
With alcohol, I'm sort of removing things about myself. I'm not actually as much myself, but I am able to express other aspects.
There is definitely three states that provides, and it is three. Mm. I like going for drinks with people. I like how it's long, and your drunkenness is a slow decline, and it's an enjoyable decline. With weed, I think it's good, but it's like it's a bit short-lived because you end up getting too high, and then it just...
Well, I don't know. It's right if you go for 1 2-hour window, enjoyable.
But then there's a proper bell curve in that window. It's a cultural thing. Men going for drinks together is something that not a lot of other people do. It feels like in other cultures, it's like, well, I don't want to sort of be particularly open and vulnerable, but everyone sort of wants to be. Like, you have to trick yourself into being in an environment where you can get intoxicated to a state where you're then happy to talk and share. Open.
I feel
it's
like
ritualized.
I kind of flipped in my life. Now I'm just going to live with my heart to leave, sort of just be open and honest about as much as I can be. The thing about white lies, but as long as you're honest with yourself, being open and honest doesn't mean you share everything. There's less of a need to being vulnerable with someone. I feel like I'm a lot more vulnerable on the surface in my day-to-day life just because I'm kind of real about it. But there is only a certain point that you can be real to a point. I think sometimes drugs do unlock that a little bit. Rave drugs. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is an experience that's fun, but it's not the connection that I'm looking for, and I don't really like that. And as I say,
with like those sorts of drugs, that like the uppers, it feels very much like you've been normally you've got access to like 0 to 10, and they've put you on like 16 for an evening. There is a deficit there.
100%. Yeah.
Unsustainable, but very much an experience drug.
I don't know. I really don't know. This is the thing: is all speculation, all random opinions. Do you think weed will be legalized in the UK soon?
It is medical use.
For medical use and for a select few. They're doing a huge study, 1,000 people using cannabis for...
When the results come in and they get picked apart for a little while, but then, we know what the results will be, and it will be all clear, go ahead.
Go ahead, yeah. It's amazing it's taking this long, it's mad.
What another obstacle that I can't get over with, like, why you wouldn't want to legalise it, it's you're directly funding terrorism and organised crime. And as drug users, everyone that buys drugs
is actively contributing.
Fully aware of that.
Mm,
and depending what drug you're buying depends...
How the severity of...
What terrorist group you're actually supporting.
Yeah.
But I don't know why the government wouldn't want to actively seek to knock that on the head, purely for that reason. Mm. It's like, we can take this revenue and whip it into the economy rather than it funding the Albanian mafia or, you know, whoever.
Mm. I watched the Vice documentary on the biggest supplier of magic truffle in Amsterdam.
Well.
So basically, they were like the biggest supplier of magic mushrooms. And then the ban came in and they had 10 days to get rid of all their stock. Apparently, there were literal protests. People have like water pistols filled with mushroom spores, just shooting them all over parks and stuff because they're like so angry at the government banning magic mushroom. Then we're like, right, we have to go to supply of truffle. And it just happened in 10-day period and they had to just switch. What the hell? Like, there just seems to be just out of nowhere a random ban and they've just had to adapt. And I would love to know commercially how that tax, does it benefit? It must do. There must be loads of money.
Not? If you're decriminalising, so you're reducing the need for police, increasing tax revenue that never existed before, so it's gone from a complete expense, but at least there's a revenue stream in there now. I don't know.
Well, it's the same with like, okay, so cannabis in Amsterdam. Is the majority of it grown there, or do they ship in from, is there?
All there.
Okay.
So I think that's part of it, that it's like in California, it's all grown in California.
Mm.
So it's like, there's a whole weed industry. Listening to Ender's Game.
Oh, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's sick. It's such a surreal concept. Like, there's the plot twist is savage. And
it's going to be annoying now that I've watched it.
Yeah,
I see it. But then I suppose it's like reading it for the second time. So I know
what you're in for.
Yeah. What was it? There was a line in it that I read. We need to keep him isolated. Keep his creativity up. I was like, ooh.
Bitch. It's true, though. Like, when you're isolated, I think you do... Your thoughts do run 10 times faster and harder.
I think they do too.
It's such a good book. One of my favourite YouTubers actually recommended it. I'm getting book recommendation off a YouTuber. This is poor. And it was really, really good. And I was like, oh, this is actually sick. And it's not very big. So being dyslexic, it was perfect. And I read it on holiday. And I remember thinking, like, the concept of in when they're fighting in that dome thing. Sick. Kind of concept.
Oh, I love it.
I don't know how, like film is to the book.
They miss out so much.
But, like, in the... Because they've just got to battle school.
Okay,
yeah. How much of that?
Mm. There's so many more, like, childhood dynamics. In the book, it very much follows sort of the sci-fi scene, where in the film, follows the sci-fi scene, but in the book, it's like how the children interact as much as anything.
Yeah, they're younger in the book.
Yeah, way like
eight
younger.
And 10.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in the they're film, just like super geniuses. Uh-huh.
It's weird how they do that, because in Game of Thrones, they do that, don't they? Where in all the books, Daenerys starts being like 11, 10.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And in the book,
well, in the film, they like age how many years? A few years. But in the books, it's like they legit go the from children
decade.
To yeah. men and women.
Yeah.
Cool. So back to drugs. One thing that I think should be acknowledged and is my biggest gripe is sort of like the bravado in drugs. People who are like, oh, I take drugs, or I don't know, they just suddenly think they're a Barry Big Bollocks because they've done a drug. No, you're just taking a substance that doesn't make you any better than anyone else. What are you trying to give off? Some kind of gangster vibe? Like, it's no, you're creating a culture around a drug that is quite toxic and dangerous.
You're not enlightened. You might think that you've had an epiphany, but it is just you've had a conversation with yourself, which is interesting to no one but you.
Ultimately, taking drugs or not taking drugs is not important. You live the life you want to live. So just because you've taken drugs, you shouldn't hold that over someone. Someone paints this picture of, oh, yeah, I take loads of drugs and I'm really cool. If anything, the minute you say that, I think it's really sad. And I think, God, is that the only thing? You define yourself by the fact that you've taken drugs before.
In the abstract, it's tragic. Like, someone's showing off about their drug use. You're showing off that you are in need of constant and consistent escape.
Yeah.
Great. So let's be friends. Dangerous.
Oh, 100%. And I think that's really, really toxic. It makes it really intimidating for other drug users. It's especially like lots of propaganda where you see an advert of someone smoking a joint and their eyeballs explode and they're chundering their guts up. Okay, so there's already a stigma around drugs already. They definitely should be taken with a pinch of salt. They're not for everyone. They can be really dangerous. But at the same time, educate people rather than bigging up some, you know, propaganda.
It's when drugs become a top man hat. Imagine a little dweeb with a trilby on from Top Man. That trilby has more personality than that person. He's defined by the hat. It wears him.
Yeah.
And he wears the hat to add to his character. I think people can do that with drugs. If you are the guy that does coke, it becomes your personality.
Mm.
A substance has more to say about your life than you do. What defines you really does define you. And if you're defining yourself, drug use.
Mm.
Mental.
I mean, you could apply that to pretty much anything. People who purely sort of go out or socialize to take drugs, or they can only sort of socialize while they're on a drug.
And they're not really bothered who they're out with,
yeah.
Where they're out. Do you all do drugs? Yes. Do we have drugs? Yes. Mm. Let's go out.
And that's like, well, what the hell?
It's the lowest common denominator, isn't it? What the agreement is there, let's take some drugs in a dark room together and dance. Without the drugs, we wouldn't be in the room. Without drugs, we wouldn't be with each other. It's
very
reductive,
much,
isn't it? I think often. It boils everything down to its like cheapest.
I feel like that's the beginning of the dark side of drugs, is that kind of environment. And that is the beginning of that mindset, is where people start abusing them. And because once you're isolated and on drugs, that's not cool. An experience, but if you're experiencing on your own all the time, then, you know, I applied for a couple of recruiting jobs and I met a lot of those people on a night out and we were just having a chilled boogie and they were so off their face on cocaine. I do not want to spend my working hours with you people. This sounds and looks awful. I do not want to be involved with these people who clearly like the only thing they're doing is they're working and then just abusing these drugs. That made me feel so uncomfortable. Yeah. It was like a culture I just didn't want to even dip my toes in. Do you think there's a... there's good drugs and bad drugs?
No.
Really?
I think all drugs are bad, actually.
Okay.
It's all about usage, isn't it? So
okay.
I'm not sure you can use drugs safely recreationally. I think there is always an element of danger there.
And what about something like cannabis?
even that, it can be abused. If you're using it as a coping mechanism to sort of help you through your day-to-day existence, it's like there's a fundamental error there that you need to address that issue that's causing you strain from the day-to-day that you're escaping from.
Is that that instant gratification thing that you're using that as a tool again?
Exactly. Know? All this tool business. Once you use a drug for a purpose and you sort of realize that it's good for that purpose, whether that's to relax, whether that's to sort of have like a nice, soft, trippy experience, whether it's to socialize with your friends, or whether it's to sort of pull yourself out of a depressive loop. Once you identify that it does it, why wouldn't you keep doing that? Like rinse and repeating it. So I think anything is up for abuse, and even things like cannabis, although it might not be chemically addictive, it is psychologically addictive.
Oh, yeah,
and 100%. That is almost 100% of addiction in my mind. I think a very small element of it is a chemical component.
Well, like, I remember reading somewhere, I think it was in that book again, Chasing the Scream, where it talks about how something like 98% of people who try heroin don't end up having a problem. It's only like 2%, a small percentage. But those people who do have had psychological trauma, and then it becomes a coping mechanism, it becomes a tool, and that's how addiction starts. And yes, it's a lot more chemically addictive than a lot of other drugs, but you have to be susceptible to that in the beginning. Look at food. You know, people smash food to the point of serious obesity. And I mean, yeah, sugar's quite addictive, but you could argue that a lot of food isn't. And yet, you know, it's that.
But there's more and more research to sort of suggest that chemical addiction does not cause withdrawal. Coming down off heroin, say, after an addiction, it's not necessarily the deficit in your system of that chemical that's causing that period of severe angst, let's call it, when you're coming down the drug. Because there's, you can observe between a similar doses of morphine in a medical environment over a set period of time, and people that have been taking heroin recreationally over a set period of time. The people on morphine don't go into withdrawal. On paper, technically they should. People with heroin addiction do. And it's more about, when you stop doing heroin as a heroin addict, getting rid of a substance habit, but then you're also having to deal with the issue that you've been suppressing with that substance habit for so long that causes so much issue. A lot of it is a placebo-based or psychosomatic, or there's like a mental health and a physical health, getting more and more suggested that it's psychological.
I completely agree with that. I mean, they said that again about the Canadian heroin dispensaries, and they say that getting free heroin and your life starts getting better because you're not constantly chasing heroin, then you stop wanting to take heroin because your life's getting better. I think that's probably quite plausible. But then I also think there is some benefit to cannabis. Helped so much. Smashing antidepressants for years and at high doses just turned me into this drone. Having a joint here and there has really helped know that that is like guaranteed downtime. There's a psychological relaxation I get with that. You know, and I guess some people say, oh, you could do that with a glass of wine. No, for me, it helps me. And I feel like I'd much rather do a couple of joints a week than two really powerful pills every single day. And I know that's controversial because a lot of people say, oh, you know, mental health and cannabis, they're not the ones to go together. But personally, I think it's been incredible. People who took medical marijuana, inverted commas, medical, I thought, you just want to get high, don't you? But maybe it is psychological, but it is genuinely, I feel like I've reaped a lot of benefit from smoking cannabis.
If you're seeking benefit from it, then absolutely live your life. But it amounts to the same thing. In the same way that an antidepressant isn't going to make your mental state better, there's additional work that has to be done alongside that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And I think, I think with cannabis, it's the euphoric element of it might confuse initially. It serves a similar purpose rather than feeling like you've got a marshmallow stuck over your head with an antidepressant.
It's a somewhat
enjoyable experience, uplifting. I suppose the game of an antidepressant really is to stabilize you while help is being offered to get you out of the state that you're in. As long as that help is being provided and you are lifting yourself from one state to another. I see that like an antidepressant or weed potentially be used as a stopgap plaster, if you like.
I think I agree with that, to be fair. Yeah, well, there's a lot of evidence today that after like 6 weeks, antidepressants, they really do much. And there's only like 13% increase in success rate on antidepressants.
It's a suicide prevention tool, essentially. It's designed to make you go from a zero to a 2.5. and then hold you at that 2.5. It's never going to get you to a 9, like happy.
But I think, again, it's because it's not like regulated and all that, it could be easily abused.
But to what ill effect?
Yeah. Well, unless as you're psychologically addicted to it and it starts ruining your life, that onus is on you, I guess. And you have to...
Why not offer weed as a holistic alternative?
Yeah, I think my dream job would be to set up some kind of hippie, holistic counselling place where you come.
Mm-hmm.
not that way. And you, yoga, martial arts, there's meditation, bit of weed smoking, and lots of therapy. And we just talk about life and stuff, and that would be the dream.
Get high and chat shit.
Pretty much.
And that is the name of this podcast. Get high and talk shit, maybe.
Episode one.
So Connor's in charge of the world. Would you legalize drugs, do you think?
Yes, but I would heavily, heavily invest in education and counseling / therapy for those who have psychological trauma or and end up being addicted. Because I think you should help addicts. I don't think you should lock them up. It's stupid. You're just adding to the trauma if someone's abusing drugs. They're clearly abusing drugs for a reason. Then why are you locking them up?
If it was effective, there, but it isn't effective. It doesn't treat, it doesn't prevent, it doesn't deter. What's the point? There is no point. It costs a huge amount of money. The amount of police time that's pumped into catching weed dealers.
Yeah.
Like, surely that money reallocate into rehabilitation and treatment and counselling, it's going to have a far bigger effect than if we catch you 4 times with weed in your pocket, you'll get 2 months. It doesn't deter anyone. The people that want to do drugs need to do drugs, need, in inverted commas, but... You feel the need to do drugs, like I'm compelled to do it. I'm going to do it regardless.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that none of my life drug use has ever been impacted by the legality of the thing I'm taking. Doing a class A to a class C, I'm doing a drug. That's what's important to me. It's like, that's the step that I'm overcoming. Do I want to intoxicate myself? Yes. Does the illegality factor into it at all? No. Do I think I'll smoke weed over do coke because one's a C and one's an A? No.
I think it's a B now. Well, I don't know. Who knows?
Nuts. Who cares? Yeah, it's all bollocks.
Yeah, I think...
Fuck the government and fuck Boris.
Yeah, well, politics has another episode of stress and pain in my brain. Back to drugs. People should be educated on the consequences. We drink, right? And we all know, okay, this is bad for your liver. And these are the short-term effects, these are long-term effects. Basically, you know the package, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of drugs, you just see morons taking them in doses they don't know, in situations they don't understand. And it's
unregulated. You're unsure of purity. You're unsure of cut. Absolutely no idea. The money that you're paying is funding organized crime and terrorism. Mm. One or the other, at the end of the day, it's falling into one of those two pockets. Normally, any terrorist act is funded with drug money. I just can't understand the logic why you wouldn't want to legalize, formalize, and tax.
Well, exactly. I think the United States are already seeing ridiculous returns on taxing weed and things. Mm-hmm. I personally would legalize it, but I'd tax it. I'd make sure people understand. I'd definitely have an age restriction, for sure.
What would that be based on? Would it be on a purely medical ground? So if you can, I say, healthily smoke weed at 16?
I mean, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that smoking weed as an adolescent is really bad for your brain development. So don't do that, kids. I think it's just a maturity thing as much as that. People should be educated on drugs more than they are now. 2 lessons at school, and it was like, don't take drugs, they're so bad for you, and it'll just mess your life up. And that was my expectation of drug. You realise it's like, it's a different drunk. It's not that mental, but also the consequences on the hard drugs, at least, are savage. They will fuck you up.
Yep.
They're like, oh, it's a different drunk. It's fine. I'll just get really drunk if you're smashing MDMA. That will cause you permanent damage for life. If you mess this up, this will fuck you and there is no going back. And people are like, it's really fun. Yeah, but you don't understand.
Got no way of, at least with a bottle of whiskey, you know that it's a thing. You don't know if your cocaine is 40%, 90%.
Yeah.
You've got absolutely no way of judging how... you should never feel safe doing drugs, essentially. Because there's so many variables. You are
100%.
Lucky dipping.
That should be more well known. I was in a very privileged position that doing a biology degree, I had access to like a lot of scientific papers that, you know, talked about the chemical pathway of drugs, but not just like that, but also the effects of the psychological impact and social studies as well. And I was a bloody loser and just read all of it. I think educating myself on any kind of drug, if I'm ever going to take anything, I'll be like, I want to know everything. I don't want to mess about with this thing. I won't gamble on something. So the first time I ever took cannabis, which is the first drug that I ever took, I literally read everything. Yeah. I know, such a weird, like, I barely drank. Like, I literally never drank because of kickboxing and pursuing all that stuff. And I was going through a bit of a mental health crisis. And then I was reading some stuff about how it can help inflammation in the brain, and that's responsible for a lot of depression. And then I kept seeing people like Nate Diaz, who's a famous UFC fighter, just smashing the joints. He can be a top athlete and still smoke a lot of weed. And then I started reading all the research and how the cannabinoid pathway in the brain, how it passes the blood-brain barrier, and what the terpenes do. And yeah, it was pretty fascinating stuff, to be fair. And then also I was, well, I don't want to smoke it because smoking is bad. And this is the extent. So I was like, oh, I'll make some brownies, because at least that way in my, you know, my lungs, I need those lungs for physical exercise and my athleteness and all that bollocks. So we made brownies and it was really cute, innocent. There was a group of us. We all watched, we watched Asterix and Obelix.
So fucked up.
So jakes.
It's a good high viewing though, really.
Oh, 100%. Uh-huh. Like just, oh, it's so funny. So I realized that the weed would be a lot stronger with edibles because it goes through your liver. And when it goes through your liver, it's like basically 10 times more potent. And I knew that, and I made all the cannabis. I was like, okay, but first experience, I'll probably only do it once, blah, blah, blah. We made 2 brownies each. We were really, really high, having a great time. Like, it was all just giggly and laughs, just watching a film, something very innocent. And we only planned to eat one each. We allocated 2 for each person. They can have one now and one later. One of my mates had both of his, and his eyeballs were literally minuscule. His eyelids barely open. It was so funny, just giggling to himself in his own little world. And I thought, of all drug experiences, that's quite a nice, innocent one that I think, yeah.
Bonding, isn't it? I think it's quite nice to be unified with weed.
Mm.
I did a similar thing with tabs of acid once.
Of course you did.
Rules don't apply. Yeah, doubling up on those, not the one.
That must have been mental. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not surprised. Like,
yeah, brain rape, I think it's referred to. Yeah, like the next day it feels like someone's...
Jesus. I've done a lot of reading on psychedelics because I took the whole magic truffles in Amsterdam, and they're very much like the baby psychedelics. Sort of interest in the whole ego death, scientific research on psychedelics and the impact on psychology and the brain and stuff. Really fascinating. Never done it, but it's still also a little bit scary.
Absolutely. It's intense.
Yeah.
And it's taxing and it's unstoppable.
Mm.
And there's a lot spoken about how it's an enlightened experience. To be honest, truthfully, I think the less in touch with yourself you are, and possibly the less intelligent you are, the more enlightening it is.
Oh, okay.
Because essentially, you're only accessing your own consciousness. So you're only ever having a conversation with the part of yourself that's willing to speak back to you. So it's not as if you're getting insight from like Mother Nature or like this guru or this sort of insightful know-all being. You're just tapping a bit of your brain that's normally quite quiet. And with the ego death, in the moment, sure, you feel that everything is in peace and everything is balanced and everything's great and very like new wave hippiness. That dies when the high dies. So it's not as if your ego dies. It's like your ego's sleeping.
No, true. And I think that's quite fascinating. I've spoken about this before. There have been moments in my meditation when I have felt that, like for literally about a tenth of a second, I get this ridiculous wave of contentment at oneness.
That's real.
That's
what I'm saying. That's been achieved without artifice. It's the same as feeling like drunk and content. You can't really compare being drunk content with that moment of contentness that you felt. It's more like apathy. With drugs, it makes you not care as opposed to...
Oh, certainly with like dissociative and stuff. That's why people drink and it just removes...
But even with uppers, it's turning things on at the expense of other things. It's not turning things off necessarily, but it's turning things on to a high... The day-to-day woes and concerns are not...
It is a tricky one, to be fair.
It is.
It's a personal thing. I don't know.
If you were to have a conversation with yourself, what advice would you give yourself about drugs, about your approach, what to watch out for, not?
For me, it'd probably be, it sounds really bad advice. This is the issue. For me, it's just relax. People who take drugs, that's their thing. Less judgment. I feel like I was so narrow-minded about the whole subject in the beginning. I actually really, really grateful for being as cautious as I was and reading up everything about it, because I think that definitely put me in such a good position. Open your mindset to it a bit, but also get you stressed about it.
That advice you would want your 14-year-old self to be given?
No, I wouldn't give that to my 14-year-old self.
You know what, mate? With drugs.
Chill.
Take the brakes off. Go wild.
Absolutely not. Don't look at other people as leadership in drugs. Certainly take on board people who are more experienced and listen to what they have to say. But just because they're doing that doesn't mean you have to. And it doesn't mean that that's right for you or you'll be happy with that. What do you want to do? I think some people who are completely content being sober, great. Love that. That part of you should cherish. There's no need for drugs. The drugs are ultimately pretty fucking pointless in the whole grand scheme of things. I mean, I used to go out sober all the time.
Uh-huh.
And the main reason that was because I didn't want alcohol to affect my performance. And I realize now, if you're going on a night out, you're going to be absolutely shagged from staying up all night anyway. So it doesn't make any difference.
The next day's a write-off.
I also had issues with drinking. The biggest temper ever. And I still get really sad now. Not so much like angry, but just down. Mm. And I know that, okay, alcohol for me, limit it. It's not for me. It's like, you know, partake, but I'm not regularly smash it because that's what everyone else does. I think that's an important lesson, what you want to do. And I realized that all this sort of trauma at the time I was going through was just being unleashed when I was drunk. I should still be responsible for that. That was a long-winded piece of advice for myself. But yeah, what about yourself?
What advice do I give myself?
Moderation.
No. What I would stress is that it's a fun but hollow experience. Mm. Bear that in mind. Mm. And you will learn nothing. That's it. If you're approaching it from an attitude where it's not going to give you answers, just like it's a fun dead end.
Yeah.
But that's all it is. Mm. A fun dead end. Mm. A lot of my existence has been against that advice. To no avail. Some weird life experiences and some anecdotes that scare parents, mainly.
Mm.
Tread with care.
Yes.
That's the advice I give myself. Tread with care, bitch. Because I have no experience.
Ah, this is future Monty.
There was a thing, you should do this when we were high, it's fun. There's a website where you can send yourself future emails.
Oh,
insane. I haven't received any that I've sent myself. But there's going to be a lot of emails, probably from next year onwards. They're going to start coming in.
Oh,
and I used to send them regularly, like little letters to myself. We used to send like group ones. We'd all be chilling and let's send a group email.
That's cool. More small tangent from the old drugs topic, but I knew of a story of a guy who sent Snapchats of his son to his son when he was like a baby.
Yeah, I've heard
so
about,
he's going to open up and it's going to be like 10 years of Snapchats. That's awesome.
On their birthday, you set them up with an email address. Every birthday, every Christmas, you write them a letter and send it to their email account. Mm. Pictures, that's anything. Cool. And then on their 18th birthday, you give them the password and the email address. This is your life that I've been emailing this account forever. It's really, really cute.
I love that.
Oh, imagine if you were a parent that cared.
I mean, it's more the effort. I feel like my parents did the best they could. If I was a parent, I'd love to think I do all this stuff, but will I?
Bollocks.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that really stops me being a parent or wanting to be a parent. I know how much effort and like dedication, especially my mum, put in. Honestly, I'm prepared to put about half the effort that she put in, but I want twice the result. It's not attainable.
Mm.
I can remember like little life lessons that she taught, not even taught me. They're always bollockings, but effective ones.
Mm.
Where I just don't feel I would have like the gumption, the will.
I think, do you think, I mean, this is what parents would say. They just suddenly, they didn't realize they had that until they had the child. So it's not until you have the child that you can actually feel that. My biggest argument against children is the environment.
Oh, yeah.
Every single time. I want to be a dad more than anything. I genuinely think I would slack off all my training and everything because I think being a dad would be incredible.
Be tiresome.
It would be tiresome, yeah. But I'm also like, what kind of planet will we be giving them? It might not even be possible because they were like, right, well, we're not allowed to have more than a billion people, so six of you just gonna have to go somewhere.
Down here. Yeah, person before they have a baby, child, should take a long, hard look in the mirror and think, does the world need more of this? If the answer isn't like a fully solid yes, knock it on the head. don't procreate.
No, it's true.
It's like, unless you think, am I in the top 10 percentile? If the answer to that is no, you've got no business having children.
We don't.
But it's even a self-assessment. I'll accept that. If you think that you are in the top 10%, have a child. You don't.
I'm certainly not in that position right now.
Don't. If you're not doing crack, you're not living.
That is not sounding. I'm certainly not having kids. I'm banning you from having children. End of.
I'm doing that with lifestyle. So.
Okay. Finish there. We still need a name for these kind of
podcasts. Chatting shit.
I was thinking we should just call it brain dump. Like, literally.
Like actual dump.
Nah, that's boring.
Yeah, but to be confirmed, I guess. Yeah,
we'll figure something.
Well, but, you know, like it or lump it.
Yeah.
It's our show, not yours.
Wait. So that does it for this.
Bored.
Okay, see ya.
Bye. Yeah.
So that does it for the first chat episode, chat being chat hard about a topic. So yeah, excited for these new sub-series. Huge thank you for Monty. His editing skills are quite phenomenal. So really glad that he's been able to chip away at this one. Next episode, sex and relationships. So looking forward to that. Till next time.
See ya.